Want to at least begin by exploring a topic which I think it's a little bit of a cliche topic, but it's also something that I think really lies at the heart of what so many people nowadays are searching for, something that is a popular topic, and that's the topic of spirituality. What is spirituality? What does it mean to be spiritual? There are many things out in the world that will present themselves as things that will give you depth and give you spirituality and give you meaning. So I'd like to try to understand the concept a little bit and then maybe understand how it relates to us and get a deeper appreciation, hopefully, for ourselves. If we look at the English word, the spirit, spirituality, spirit. What's the spirit? How do we define the spirit? So one situation where we use the term the spirit is we speak about, say, the spirit of the law. There's the letter of the law, and there's the spirit of the law. What does it mean, the spirit of the law? So when we speak about the spirit of the law, we mean that what it's really about. No, there's the letter of the law. I'm not going against the letter of the law, but I'm going against the spirit, the essence, what it's really about. So at least in English, when you say spirit, you mean what's really going on here. Another usage of the word spirit in English is when someone passes away and you say, oh, I sense their spirit. Well, what does that mean? That means that even though they're not here anymore, there's a remnant. There's something of them still here. I can't perceive it, but I know it's here. And I think that, again, it's English, but I think that also helps us understand a lot about ruchnius, about spirituality. Because spirituality is a little bit of a nebulous thing. Something that we talk around it, we talk about it, you can sort of feel it, but you really can't describe it. If you're having a spiritual feeling right now, you wake up in the morning or it's the middle of the day or you're davening and you feel some type of spiritual feeling, you can't put that into words. It's like a spirit, almost. It's there, but it's imperceptible. So using these two definitions of spirit, spirituality sounds like it's some untangible essence of something. When you're connecting to an imperceivable essence, the depth of what something's about. I think there's another definition of spirituality which is very important. And I think it explains a lot of social phenomena, whether it's social media or it's other social phenomena. And that's, everyone has this inner desire or yearning to connect to something deeper than themselves. Or maybe not deeper, let's use the word bigger than themselves. If I follow a sports team, or if I am a fan in an actor or an actress's fan club, why would I do that? They don't know who I am. Why would I spend my time buying paraphernalia and associating with a group, a political movement, or an intellectual movement, an ism of some sort? Why does a person do that? Why were people swept after communism or socialism, capitalism? What draws them to that? And part of it is that sitting in my little room in my house, in my corner of the world, I feel very small. Even though I feel very big and deep and important, but my surroundings make me feel very small. And sometimes by connecting to something bigger than yourself, an organization, a movement, an ideal, to fight for something, it helps us connect to that deep want to be connected to something bigger. And I think that's also a little bit what spirituality is. You're singing, or you're davening, or you're hearing something, and you feel that there's something big going on, and you're trying to connect to that, something that's larger than life. And you want to be a part of that. Moshe Rabbeinu, what did he say? He was at the peak of the prophetic career. He's speaking peh to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and he says, I want more. Show me who you are. Let me in deeper. I want to connect to something bigger, something greater. And I think that that's a very normal human desire or need. And that means that spirituality is a desire to connect to something that's bigger and greater than myself, but also something that speaks to the essence, the spirit. to really connect the things as they are. Unfortunately, so many people search for this depth, for this greatness. They cross the world, they hike across India, they feel the need to explore so many external things in their search for greatness and depth and spirituality. When in truth, the greatest source of spirituality and depth can be found within a person themselves. They don't really need to travel anywhere to access the greatest spiritual force that there is. It's reminiscent a little bit of that story with Eliyahu HaNavi. Remember when he's on the mountaintop? We'll make it a little more dramatic than it really says there, but he's on the mountaintop and he hears the loud thunder, but God's not in the thunder. And he hears the earthquake, and Hashem is not in the earthquake. And it's like the Are You My Mother, right? Remember that book? So there's all these things, and there's the snort, and God's not in the snort. And finally, there's just that kol demama daka. There's just that soft voice. And I'm positive that that voice came from within himself. He just couldn't hear it because of all the other noise going on. And that message is teaching us that a lot of times we look in the mirror and we say, no, this is not where it is. It's something outside, something deep beyond here. When in truth, if we are able to access the spirituality within ourselves, we wouldn't really need to go anywhere. So what is this kol demama daka in a person? What is this wellspring of depth and spirituality that's in each and every one of us? So it's clear that that's what we refer to as our neshama. But where did the neshama come from? What is a neshama? People always say, oh, I have a neshama. What does that mean, I have a neshama? What's my neshama? So if we go back to the creation of mankind, the Yitzar Hashem Elokim es Adam, this is Perek Beis, Pasuk Zayin, Ofer min Adama, Vayipach be'apov nishmas chayim ve'yah Adam lenefesh chaya. Man was formed out of clay, out of earth. But what made him into a person? Vayipach be'apov nishmas chayim. And here we have a very strange verb used in the Torah. Hashem blew into man, or breathed into man, his soul. Why does the Torah say that he breathed it into him? Use another verb. He placed it into him. He embedded it in man. He shot it into man. He pushed it into man. He placed it. What do you mean that he breathed it? Why? But Hashem, just as he doesn't have a hand, he doesn't have a mouth, and he doesn't have lungs. So if you're going to borrow a term, say that he placed it into man. What do we mean that he breathed it into man? He blew it into man. The relationship between breath and the neshama is clear. The Hebrew word for breath is neshima, menshom. It's how you say to breathe. Menshom, neshima. Neshama comes from the word breath, but why? So there's four words. They're recorded most popularly. People know it from the Tanya, but it comes from an earlier sefer called the Sefer HaPliya. It says four words. Man denofach, midilei nofach. One who blows or breathes, breathes from himself. What does that mean? It means that in order to breathe, in order to blow air out of your body, you have to take air from within your body in order to blow it out. When Hashem breathed a neshama into man, it means that Hashem took something from within himself and imparted it to man. To place a neshama into man means Hashem picked something up off the table and he put it into mankind. But to breathe a neshama into man means Hashem took something from within himself, something divine, something of his own essence, and that's what he imparted to man. Which means that if we have a neshama, it means that we're walking around with a piece, kavayachal, of a Kadosh Baruch Hu within ourselves. You know, a lot of times a person looks in the mirror and they look at themselves and all they see is the outside. All they see is the physical. They don't see that there's something divine within them. Even the terms we use when we say, I have a neshama is not even a proper expression. I have a body. I am a neshama. Who you are is your neshama. That's what made you from a piece of clay into a person. Your body is not what makes you you. And it's hard to really believe that, especially in our culture, where everything is so focused on how people look and how we present ourselves. You know, imagine for a second, Rabbi Arya Kaplan used this mushel, but it was 25, 30 years ago, so we have to update it a little bit. But it's not something that's so crazy. If you know anyone who, unfortunately, lo aleinu, has had a serious psychological breakdown, to the point where you visit them, and you're sitting in front of your friend, but it's not your friend, because the personality is gone, the memories aren't there, the communication is not what it was. Your friend might be alive physically, but that's not your friend. And lehefech, imagine the opposite. Imagine a technology. Who knows what'll happen in a few years? Imagine, unfortunately, lo aleinu, someone has an illness in their body, but their mind is fine. And we come to them and we take a flash drive, a USB disk on key. I'm not sure what we call it in America. And you stick it into their brain. And you upload or you download onto your drive their memories, their sensitivities, their personality. And you take it all out of them because the body is sick. And now you come to a fresh new body. Maybe you cloned it and it looks like them. Maybe it's totally different. It doesn't look like them at all. But you connect this flash drive and now you upload all of the material into this new body. The memories, the personality, the sensitivities, the sense of humor. And you're sitting there talking to this thing. And it remembers what you guys did in 10th grade and that fun time that you had. And it makes the same jokes and it's the same sensitive person. And you can have that hour and a half, 2 hour conversation at 1 o'clock in the morning with them, just like you did with your friend. So isn't that your friend? It doesn't look like the person. None of the flesh is that person. But it's your friend. The inside, the soul, the memories, the intellect. That's who your friend is. So this whole idea of a neshama is very nebulous. It's very hard to really grasp. Well, you know, who am I really? Am I the person that I look in the mirror? Oh, that's me. I remember just recently, I banged into a friend in Ramat Beit Shemesh who I had known back when I knew Rabbi Turetsky. And he said, oh, I just found some pictures from camp, from 8th grade. I have to send you a picture. And there it was, a picture of like 10 of us with our arms around each other. And I couldn't even find myself at first. I was like, I noticed from the baseball hat I was wearing, I said, oh my gosh, is that me? That doesn't look like me. You know, what defines us and who we think of ourselves when we think of what makes us who we are. But the neshama that Hashem gave us, that piece of Him, do we realize that who we are is something divine, something that has a piece of Hashem in it? You know, sometimes if my kids are misbehaving and getting on my nerves, so I try very hard to just say, like, he's really a big neshama. He's really a neshama. Because, you know, it's hard. You're looking at the kid, and the kid is misbehaving and doing so much, and to try to peer away at the outside and realize that inside there's something very deep and something very special. Unfortunately, we know a lot of people, and sometimes we don't really know them. We know the outside. We don't know who they are in the inside. We don't really know their soul. So we all have a body, but we have this soul inside that fills us with divinity. And because the terms or the concepts here are abstract, so some of the words that are used by Chazal to try to bring this idea, to concretize it a little bit, one of the most common terms they use is or, light. Imagine a darkened body, but there's a light inside that's enlightening the body a little bit. And that's the imagery that Chazal use. The body by itself is dark, it's cold, it's very physical. But the soul brings some divine light into the body. But there's something very important I need to explain to you in order for you to understand really well how the neshama works. When Hashem gave each and every one of us our essence, our neshama, so the neshama, as we said, it's divine, it's a piece of God. And therefore, it's way too powerful, way too bright, if we want to use the imagery of light, to really be contained in our bodies, certainly when we're younger. And our bodies are still the main defining element of ourselves. So the neshama, the soul, it can't fully enter our body. It's just too powerful. It'll overpower the body with light. In fact, I'm not a Kabbalist, but the few terms that I know from Kabbalah, that's what they say, that when Hashem created the world and he put his essence into the world, the light was so bright that it shattered all of the vessels that were there to hold his light. So Hashem gives us a neshama, but most of it, whatever this means, remains outside of us. Yes, our own identity, what's really us, it remains outside of us. It's pushing, it's trying to get in, but the body can only contain so much of the light. Think about it. When you're walking around, you look at yourself in the mirror, when you're looking at your friend, even if you can perceive the light in them, you're only seeing a minuscule of who they really are. It's like an iceberg, but like an upside-down iceberg, because we're talking spiritually. Like an iceberg. You see an iceberg, and it's jutting out over the water, and you're on your, you know, you're on the Titanic, and you see the iceberg coming, and you say, wow, look at that iceberg. And you realize that underneath the water is a much huger, gargantuan piece of ice. All you see is a little bit sticking up over the surface of the water. So that's sort of what we are all about. There's this neshama that was placed into us, but only a tip is able to get into us. There's this huge mass of spirituality that's you, but it's not able to enter. One of the images that they use is like the body to the shoe. It's a little funny imagery, but imagine, you know, you got a new shoe and you tried to get your whole body into the shoe. You can't do that. Only your foot fits into the shoe. You know, I have a 1 year, 1.5 year old daughter. So, and my wife has like boots. So, you know, she can get like both her feet in, maybe like get up to her diaper, she can get into the boot. But you can't get your whole body into a shoe. So that's the imagery that Chazal use. They say that the soul is like the body in this mashal, and the shoe is the body. Got that? The body is like the soul, and the shoe is like the body. So just like the body tries to get into the shoe, but only the tip of it can get in, so too the neshama is trying to get into your body, but only a little bit of it can get in. This explains, by the way, a very interesting Gemara in Brachos. The Gemara in Brachos says, towards the end, it speaks a lot about dreams, and it has all these strange things. If you see this in the dream, it means this. If you see this in the dream, it means this. One of those Gemaras is that if you see your shoe falling off your foot, it means you're going to pass away. If that's your dream. If you dream about it tonight, it's not because of that. It's only because I spoke about it. But what is... Everyone's going to go to sleep tonight like, don't dream about a shoe. Don't dream about a shoe. What's the imagery of the shoe falling off? In light of what we just said, that's... Why is that death? Because the shoe is the connection of the body and the soul. So our mission in life is to try as hard as we can to do what? Besides keep our shoes on. What's our mission? What are we trying to do? We're trying to get as much light, as much of the body into the shoe as we can. We're trying to draw down into our bodies as much of our own self as we can. Hashem gave you this huge gift of self. It's your neshama. But so little of it can enter you. But it's not stagnant. There's this flux here. The more mitzvos you do, the more Torah you learn, the more chesed you perform, the more tefillah you engage in, the more you mold yourself into a vessel, and the more light you can contain. The stronger the vessel, the more light it can contain. And the less elevated the vessel, the weaker the vessel is, so the less light it can contain. And this is ultimately our mission, to try to dominate our bodies with as much spirituality as possible. So what emerges is that there's a little bit of a battle going on. There's a battle between the light and the dark. There's a battle between the body and the soul. And traditionally, this is how we think of the relationship between the body and soul. There's a war, there's a battle. As the light is trying to get in, but the body has its own interests and its own pursuits. And many of those keep the light out. But in truth, Hashem did not create us to be in a state of unequilibrium. He didn't create us to be constantly in battle, per se. In truth, when the body is used properly, it is not only not at odds and at battle with the soul, but it is the greatest facilitator of the soul. So let's try to get an understanding of that. In this week's Parsha, Parsha's Vayera. So, the very beginning of the Parsha, we know, Vayera, what's the first Pasuk? Vayera Ilov Hashem Be'elonei Mamre, right? Avram Avinu is sitting outside of his tent, B'Pesach Ha'Oel, and what happens? Vayera Ilov Hashem. He gets a vision. He has a rendezvous with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, with the Shechina. The Medrash tells us, why was he all of a sudden zoche to this vision of divinity? So the Medrash says, we have to look at the end of last week's Parsha to realize what this is coming on the heels of. At the very end of last week's Parsha, Avram Avinu engaged in perhaps the first mitzvah that he was commanded to do. And it's a mitzvah that's very physical, very much associated with the body. And that was the mitzvah of Bris Milah. It's a strange mitzvah that would be the first mitzvah that he would be given. And I thought that perhaps the reason why, and I think that the Medrash is trying to say this, that the reason why Avram Avinu is zoche to his giloy of Shechina of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, specifically after this mitzvah, why does he get a glimpse of the neshama, of the spirituality, of the divine in the world, specifically after the mitzvah of Milah? Because the mitzvah of Milah is a tikkun on the body. It's a fixing. The baby comes out imperfect. And the mitzvah of Milah perfects the physical body. And perhaps the message here is that if the physical body is fixed, is used properly, it will result in a revelation of divinity. Avram Avinu saw God after he was misaken his guf. In fact, the Medrash quotes a pasuk from Iov, Perek Yutes and Iov, Mi besari echsa eloka. It is through my body that I see God. And this account here of Avram Avinu and the mitzvah of Bris Milah and the gilui of HaKadosh Baruch Hu is teaching us that the body does not need to be at war with the soul. In fact, the body, when used properly, can be a tremendous facilitator for the soul. Because when the body is used properly, it is the primary vehicle for us to introduce into our lives greater levels of godliness and holiness. And let me try to explain. Let's look on the macro level for a second. The world is also a physical place. And there's also, just like man has a spiritual core to him, the world also has a spiritual core. How does man bring spirituality into the world? So there was a building that we built, and it was called the Mishkan. And the purpose of the Mishkan, what does the word Mishkan mean even?
To dwell.
What's dwelling? The wood and the stones? The Shekhinah is dwelling. The purpose of a physical building called the Mishkan was to draw Kedusha into the world. To be a facilitator for the introduction of spirituality, divinity, holiness, and Kedusha. That was what the Mishkan did on a macro level. And we know that the Rambam writes that every part of the Mishkan corresponds to a part of the human body. The menorah, the mizbeach, all of them correlate to parts of the body, because what the Mishkan does on a macro level, the body does on the micro level. Just like the Mishkan is the facilitator and the vehicle for drawing more Kedusha into the world, your body is the vehicle for drawing more and more of your neshama into your essence, into your being. So the body and the soul have this, I would almost, a synergy. There's a synergistic relationship between the body and the soul. They're not just mutually helping each other. There isn't just a mutual relationship here, or a mutually beneficial relationship. But in fact, they require each other. The body, without a soul, is just a dark, unenlightened piece of clay. And the soul, without a body, is an abstract concept of light that has no place to land. Imagine in the room right now, there are radio waves or Wi-Fi waves going through the room. But nobody has a vessel, a kli, to pick up the waves. If I turn the radio on right now, there would be music blasting in the room. But since there's no music, there's no radio, there's no physical thing that can catch those waves and translate it into sound. So there's tremendous amounts of radio waves going through the room right now, but it has no way to express itself. So it's being lost because there's nothing that can draw it down and make it physical. Right? We all understand that concept. So too, a soul without a body that's designed and dedicated to revealing the soul. So the soul is like radio waves that never have a vessel to bring it into existence. And therefore, just like the body needs the soul, our souls need our bodies. They need our physical beings in order for the neshama to have a place here in this world where it can express itself. Let me give an example of this relationship between body and soul. Not body and soul as opponents of each other, but body and soul as facilitators, as experiencing this mutual beneficial relationship. We know that there was the Dor HaMidbar. The Dor HaMidbar received the Torah, and they spent the time in the desert. Besides their complaining, they learned the Torah, they studied the Torah. The Dor HaMidbar is like the neshama of the nation. They received the spiritual core, but they lived in a bubble. They lived outside of physical existence. And Chazal tell us, their clothing didn't wear out. They ate mun. I mean, what's mun? Mun is spiritual food. They didn't go to the bathroom after they ate mun because there was no physical element to it. It was all spiritual. So the Dor HaMidbar is like the neshama. The Dor HaMidbar was the spiritual core for the nation. But that wasn't reality. That wasn't expressed yet in the world. And then we have the Dor of the generation that entered into Eretz Yisrael. And the generation that entered into Eretz Yisrael, they were motzi lechem min haaretz. They didn't eat mun. They ate the food of the land. They worked. They toiled. They were the body. They were the guf. They were the physical. And the Dor HaMidbar and the Dor of the Knesset Aretz together worked together to form what Klal Yisrael became. Because there was the neshama of the nation and there was the guf of the nation. Who was the leader, by the way, of the Dor HaMidbar? If you had to pick one character, biblical character, who? Moshe Rabbeinu. Who was the leader of the Dor of the Knesset Aretz? Yoshua, exactly. And Chazal tell us, what's the relationship between Moshe and Yoshua? Moshe's like what being? Moshe's like the sun, and Yoshua was like the moon. Now that's an amazing mashal. Why? Because the moon, you know what the moon is? It's just a big rock. And you know what the sun is? It's a tremendous force of power. But there's a little bit of an issue. The sun is unable to illuminate the night because the night is dark. But the night has something whose job it is to take the light of the sun and introduce it into the light, right? You all remember that from science class. What does the moon do? The moon doesn't have light. The moon reflects the sun's light into the darkness, meaning the moon is a tool for taking the sun that cannot express itself in the darkness, and it facilitates the expression of the sun's light into darkness. That was Yoshua's job. Yoshua took the teachings of Moshe Rabbeinu, and what did he do? He brought them into the real world. Moshe Rabbeinu taught Torah in the desert, but the desert was not a real existence. Eating mud all day with clothing that wasn't disintegrating, that was a neshama existence. But Yehoshua said, I'm going to take the teachings of Moshe Rabbeinu, and I'm going to implement them into the darkness of the physical world. And that was Eretz Yisrael. That was the door that came into Eretz Yisrael. Yehoshua is the moon. He takes the light of the sun, and he brings it into the darkness. And that is our physical existence in this world. We physically exist because, yes, you're a neshama. And you were a piece of HaKadosh Baruch Hu before you came into the world. And you could have stayed up there. And you didn't need to come into this world. But Hashem said, I want to send you into the world Because I want your spirituality. I want your soul. I want your neshama, your holiness, your kedusha, your divinity. I want that to be expressed in a physical world. So he took your physical body, you, and he threw you into this world, and he said, go out there, Yehoshua. Chazak v'amatz. Go into that physical world and take the light of your neshama and figure out a way to bring it into the world. That was the mission of Yehoshua. That was the mission of the door that went into Eretz Yisrael. And that is the mission of each and every one of us. We're physical beings. But we're physical beings with a spiritual core, with a spiritual light. And our mission is as best as we can to bring that into the world. I want to give you one more example before we wrap up that I think will hopefully enlighten us. And tarte mashma will enlighten us, and at the same time, I hope, give us a deeper impression, appreciation for the process of marriage. We know that there's two stages to marriage. We know that there's erusin, or kiddushin it's called, and nisuin. Without getting into all the details, these two processes, kiddushin, or erusin, and nisuin, also reflect the body and soul of the relationship that we have or that we will have with our spouses. Kiddushin provides the spiritual core of the relationship. Right? We all know that under the chuppah, there's two processes that go on. There's the giving of the ring and saying harayat mekudeshesli. That is the kiddushin. In the olden days, that used to take place a year before the actual wedding. We separate them now by reading the ksuba, just to separate between the two stages. The second stage of marriage is when they're standing under the canopy together, the chuppah. We say the brachos over wine, and then the husband and wife go off together, they go to the yichud room. That's the process called nisuin. That is the actual marriage. Kiddushin provides the spiritual core, the spiritual headquarters for the relationship. In fact, in halacha, after kiddushin, no physical relationship is allowed yet between the husband and wife, even though they're married. If they would want to get divorced after kiddushin, the husband would have to give the wife a get. They are, we'll use just an English term, it doesn't mean much for halacha, but they are already married on some level after kiddushin. And yet, no physical relationship is allowed yet. Because kiddushin, like its name, kiddusha, is to provide the spiritual depth of the relationship. After that, we have nisuin. After nisuin, not only is the physical relationship allowed, but that's when all of the mundane relationship starts. The husband's responsibility to provide for his wife and his responsibility to bury her if she passes away or to heal her if she gets sick. All of the physical elements of the relationship come with nisuin. So kiddushin is like the neshama of the relationship. And the nisuin is like the guf of the relationship. It's the physical part of the relationship. Now, one might make a mistake and think that the purpose of nisuin is that it replaces kiddushin. First we have kiddushin, and then we discard the kiddushin, and we move on to the next stage, nisuin. But that's not true. The Navi tells us, ve'erastich li li'olam, that erusin is forever. Nisuin is an overlay on top of erusin. Erusin never disappears. And that's because for the relationship to be proper, there needs to be the soul and the body of the relationship. There needs to be the neshama and the guf of the relationship. The Ramchal teaches an amazing statement that the Torah makes about the very first marriage of Adam and Chava. Adam comments, Zos hapam etzem me'atzamai u'basar mi'bsari. Etzem me'atzamai, says the Ramchal, what is the bone, the etzem? The etzem is what gives structure to a body. You don't see the bone. The bone is inside the skin. But without the bone, the body would be flimsy. It wouldn't be able to maintain its position. The etzem is what gives the inner strength to a person's body. And what is the skin? What is basar mibasari? It's the outside. It's the flesh. Says the Ramchal that Adam, when he was married to Chava, he said, oh, now I have a relationship that has both etzem and basar. I have a relationship that has the inner essence of a relationship, the bone, what gives the structure to something. I have the etzem, I have the kiddushin, I have the neshama, and I also have the nisuin. I have the external. I have the goof of the relationship. And I think in conclusion, when we speak about avodas Hashem, when we speak about our relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, so we have to keep this two-part relationship of erusin and nisuin, of body and soul, we have to keep it in mind. Pasuk tells us, Torah tziva lanu Moshe, morasha kilas Yaakov. And the Gemara in Brachos learns the word morasha, not that it's an inheritance, but mi'urasa, from the word erusin, kiddushin, like a marriage. That a person has to look at the Torah as being the kiddushin in his life. What provides the spiritual core to our physical existence. This is the tremendous process that we go through from Gullus to Gula. We say in Davening on Friday night, Karva el Nafshi, what do we say? Karva el Nafshi, Ge'olah. What is Ge'ula for a physical body? Ge'ula for a physical body is the redemption of the spiritual in the darkness of the physical. When a person goes through their life and they feel like they're just a physical being, that they're not enlightened by spirituality, that the light of their neshama is waning. And they don't, you know, just like the moon, waxes and wanes, and it gets smaller sometimes. There are definitely times in life when a person feels that their neshama, their moon, their Yehoshua, their vessel for introducing light is very, very small right now. It's really introducing a very small amount of light. That's the reason why the moon is sometimes larger and sometimes smaller. The sun stays the same because the Kedusha, Hashem's Kedusha is always the same. Right? That's Rav Dessler's famous mashal, that when we feel the distance from Hashem, it's like a cloudy day. What happens on a cloudy day? The sun is not any less strong on a cloudy day. It's just that there's barriers between you and the sun. The sun is just as strong. Says Rav Dessler, when we're lacking spirituality in our lives, it's not because something happened to the sun. It's because there are barriers between us and the light of God. And so too, our role is to be like the moon. Klal Yisrael's nimshol to the moon, because Klal Yisrael's mission in the world is to introduce divinity into the world. So that's why Klal Yisrael's nimshol to the moon. But every person's moon, every person's mechanism for introducing light into themselves, sometimes is smaller and sometimes is larger. And we have to try as hard as we can to reflect as much light as possible. And this is the process of each person's personal geula. Gullus, we know, is darkness. And geula is bringing that light, filling the world with the light of geula. And that can be experienced on a personal level as well. So as we daven, as we do mitzvos, as we do acts of chesed, as we try as hard as we can to make our physical selves more spiritual, to make ourselves deeper people, to make ourselves more spiritual people, going back to what we started with. Trying to connect to the essence, to the depth of life. Not to be drawn after just the physical. But as we seek that deeper, more real, that spirit of things, so Hashem should help all of us that through that process, not only should our physical lives be touched with the light of the neshama, with the spirituality of the divinity that's us, but at the same time, we should, through that, come to recognize who we really are. Come face to face with the real us. And to see our own divinity. And through that, Amir Tzashem, bring tremendous amounts of light of HaKadosh Baruch Hu into the world. And through that, Amir Tzashem, the ultimate geula, if we bring the geula on a personal level, will be zocha, hopefully, to bring the ultimate geula, to bring the light of HaKadosh Baruch Hu to the world, when we have Bias Gold Tzedek B'mheira V'yameinu.